This is it, the big 5-0 for the Muda scale. So, made it through the half century. How you feeling?
Feeling good.
Feeling good? Good. I'm glad, man. It's been fun and a good time, and I've enjoyed everything. And I'm glad because, you know, despite wherever direction storylines are going, like, the Raws have been pretty good. So, I think we kind of gotten through our negative, or at least for me, I've gotten through my, like, negative outlook, and I'm feeling kind of positive going forward.
Well, so this is Muda Scale 50. So we can talk about Raw, or we can kind of talk back if there's anything else you want to talk about. I mean, it's kind of a time to reflect. So we've got Better Have My Donuts over here on Bad News Ramen. And, you know, we kind of started off with the NWO theme. That was the first theme we started off way back when. Back when we called it the gorilla position, and then we realized that some dude already had that as his podcast. So, yes. Respectfully, we switched it up to the Muda Scale, and
which is a good name.
Yeah, have we ever said what the Muda Scale was?
I'm pretty sure we did the first time when we. Yeah. Should we do a refresher on where the Muda Scale comes from?
Yeah, I mean, we can.
Right. Yeah, so Muda Scale comes from a pretty famous match between the Great Muda and Hiroshi Hase, in which Muda bladed and cut himself pretty bad, and was just spewing blood all over, which and probably the bloodiest match there was. And from then forward, anytime anybody bled, it was rated on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being bleeding like Muda. So that was known as the Muda Scale.
Yeah. So and then kind of the first two topics that we really talked about, and I look back on it, is like 48 minutes long for our first one, 48 minutes long for the second one. It's like, where did that all go, dude? Now we're going like an hour and 20 minutes and stuff and spewing a lot of hate. But I know you're done with the hate and stuff and everything like that, so that's good. One thing, though, is with John Cena coming back, if I can kind of...
If you will.
If I can kind of divulge that little thing. I think he missed what they wanted him to do on SmackDown. You watched SmackDown, right? Did you watch SmackDown?
I think so.
You think so?
Yeah.
It was only a couple days ago, man.
Right. I think I did. I think I actually did watch it on Friday that night.
Yeah. So
that was, he came back and...
I think what they told him backstage is they wanted him to do a victory lap. But I think he misinterpreted and I think that he thought that they told him to do a victory rap. And so that's where the rap came in. It was like, oh, John Cena's back. And, oh, look, he's rapping again. So I just thought that was a, you know, typical Cena, when in doubt, rap. When in doubt, rap. WWE wants to know, can you rap?
And even if the answer is no, we're going to have you do it anyway. But as much as we bag on Cena and whatnot, I was actually impressed with his match yesterday.
I was impressed with the match on Raw. I was impressed with the match on Friday Night SmackDown. I mean, it was a good match. But, I mean, he's with other people that know how to work. So, and I think he's kind of he has the ability to put on good matches. But,
well, the thing that I think his promos still suck. But the two things that I think we harp on him the most is that his promos are bad. And that, like, he doesn't change up anything he does in the ring. And that's actually why I was really impressed on Monday. He came out with four moves that I've never seen him actually complete.
The high cross body?
The high cross body up the top.
Which was pretty weak, but okay.
But, hey, at least it's something. He's trying to do something, at least. He had the Cena Conrana that he didn't botch this time.
Okay.
He had...
Which he did on SmackDown as well.
Right. I saw that. That's two in a row. And he had this kind of, like, like lifting reverse neck breaker that I'd never seen him do before, which wasn't perfectly executed, but again, at least, you know, it's in line with his power set, and it's a different move at least. And then he had some kind of shoulder release power bomb.
So it wasn't his 1-inch vertical shoulder tackle that he usually does.
No, I didn't even see him do that.
Yeah,
I don't think he did in either match.
No five moves of doom. That he
right.
Did. Well, because he couldn't because he was in a tag match.
Right, but, well, I mean, I'm sure he figured out a way to clear the ring, but, I mean, he didn't. The match was good. He hit his spots well. He didn't go complete Superman, and the way when he set up and got his
AA. Well, he didn't go Superman on this Monday.
On SmackDown a little bit.
And then on the when he came back, he went Superman on Damian Sandow.
And Sandow, yeah. But Sandow still had a couple reverses and exhibited some good offense.
I mean, the whole thing
I thought he performed well in the match. It wasn't just a good match. I thought his part in it was really good.
When he has to do 1/6 of the match, yeah, he does really well. Yeah, good for him. I'm clapping right now. The thing that I really wanted, that Monday match with Cody Rhodes, Cody Rhodes, Goldust, and then John Cena, and then you have, I don't need your fucking help, dude. I know the lineup versus the Americans.
Yeah, that's why you're calling him Dusty Rhodes, go ahead.
Well, he was Dustin. Mm-hmm. I meant to say Dustin. So I slipped. I couldn't do it because I slipped.
Okay.
But Goldust move at the end of that finisher, and that was a tight finisher, dude. Has he done that move before?
I was kind of curious about that. I haven't seen him do it before. They're calling it the curtain call, and I actually didn't notice that curtain call was in the video game. So I'm wondering if he may have, but I know whose move that is. That's actually Yuji Nagata's.
Yeah,
that's Yuji, one of Yuji's finishers. But yeah, it was good. It looked good. He pulled it off well. I think it's perfect because he didn't really have a finisher. I think his finisher was like the kick to the genitalia in the corner, right?
Yeah.
And I mean, you're not going to get by too long with that.
That really shows the difference between him when in his previous WWE run, he was really just a really gimmick type wrestler. Mm-hmm. And right now, I mean, he's the best hot tag in the business right now. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because who's the best hot tag in the business? It's going to be Daniel Bryan. Daniel Bryan is like a great hot tag, but Daniel Bryan has his spots and the crowd really gets behind it. I've been really impressed with his hot tag. I mean, he comes in fast, and the guy's in flipping shape, dude. Best shape that I've ever seen this guy in.
Yeah.
And it really shows. I mean,
yeah. And even
that yoga's working, dude.
Yeah. DDP.
DDP's yoga.
He's still in the bag.
Yeah.
And even though he did kind of like, there was a halfway botch on that bulldog, he still recovered it about as well as he could have, considering that he didn't get a good push off. And I like that they didn't have that be the finish, because I thought that was going to be the finish right there. And I was like, oh, it's a good match. I don't want it to end on like a kind of half-botched bulldog. And I was glad that the match was able to continue, and it went really well after that, too.
Yeah.
I mean, and Sandow was good in that match. Like,
everybody was good in that match.
Yeah.
Even John Cena.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're doing a good job of with the tags and stuff. Like, the last 5 minutes of the tag match, they have a really good formula for tag matches right now. And I don't know how long it could last, because it kind of goes against, like, wrestling purists, where you just have a bunch of high spot after high spot after high spot. But the crowd gets into it, it's good, and it's fun to watch. I mean, when they choreograph it well, it works really well. So the one thing we talked about in our first move scale was like tag team wrestling, and it needed to come back. And it's good to see, like, after a year, maybe a year and a half that we've been doing this, that tag team wrestling is back, and they have a lot of good teams. We kind of touched on that before. Mm-hmm. So, we're at move scale 50. I mean, I don't want to kind of do a – I don't think the Raw is worthy of doing a rundown. I mean, it was what it was. And, you kind of had the whole Randy Orton thing. It's like, well, Randy, you're not getting over, so why don't you just be like this really conceited guy and say that all the ladies want you and stuff. And it's just like another thing that he's trying to do. But that was a good match against him and Big E Langston. All voting conspiracies aside, it was a really good match, and it was a really good spot for Big E. And the whole thing is that, yeah, Big E lost, but when you're looking at wrestling as a whole, Preparation H feels good on the whole. And Randy, won, but at the same time, he did the job for Big E Langston, too. I mean, he made Big E look like $1 million, and it really kind of shows to me that this guy can pretty much have a match with anybody. And because just with his power move set and stuff, it's an exciting match. And I mean, that's definitely a guy that I'm looking at.
And well, I don't want to go, like, I think Big E is earning everything he's getting on his own merit. And so I'm really happy that he is. And I don't want to, like, insinuate that it has anything to do with the fact that he's talented, okay? But I think it's really good that...
It's not because he's talented?
No, I think it is because he's talented, but on top, like... Because we've seen, like I'm approaching this idea that there's not too many black wrestlers that get a big singles push, and I don't want to try to imply that it's because he's black that he's getting the push. Like he's put his work in, his work is good, everything he's doing is great, but I'm glad that he's getting this opportunity because you know you can go down a long list of guys. They've tried to push guys like Bobby Lashley got this big push, and Bobby Lashley fucking sucked. Ahmed Johnson got this huge push, and while he was good for a short period of time, it wasn't really sustainable. I think Big E's coming in at the right time. I think he's the right baby face to have in this spot, and I think he might be the next guy because it's a lot of how Del Rio got the push because they were looking for this Latino guy to push as a face. And while I like his work, you know, he never really got over as a baby face. And I think in some cases they're looking for there to be another black wrestler to do that too. There's some talk like about 6 months ago that they wanted to push your boy Titus in that direction. And I like Titus, but I think he's best suited right now for the role he's in as a tag team. I think they're a really good tag team. I think he would have ultimately.
Let me stop you there. So I mean, where did you read this that they want because I read that they want to do a Titus push. But I didn't read anywhere that it was because he was black or that was like a demographic they were trying to hit. Did you read somewhere that this was a demographic they were trying to hit? Because the reason why is because it's kind of the same thing with sports or with wrestling. I mean, when you have like the Nation of Domination gimmick, you know, that's racially fueled. When I look at Big E and does he kind of, I don't even want to say pay homage to his ethnicity. Or even like say like the Usos with the war paint and the stuff that they do like coming out. I think Usos more are like really tapping into their racial background. I really don't see like when I see Biggie Lance, I don't see a black wrestler. Right. And yeah, he does, you know, he does have like the lion on him and he kind of has like red, black, and green, that type of motif going on. But I don't see him as a black wrestler. I just look at his talent. So, I mean, did you read anything about that?
Yeah, I read it a few months ago. It was at the same time when Del Rio was getting the push.
But where'd you read this from?
I think PW Insider or something. One of the ones I read from. And so, yeah, at the time that it was talking about Titus getting the push, and it was more just like there's an internal discussion to give him a push, and then they said, like, behind the scenes, they've been looking for an African American wrestler that they could push as like a big time face, all out what they were doing with Del Rio. I'm glad they didn't force it, right? And I agree with you. I don't see that either. I don't think of Langston as this is a black dude, right? The black guy that's pretty good at wrestling. He's just good all around. But that's why I think he's the right guy because it's not something that has to be forced on people. And I think it's good, man. Like there hasn't really been a good baby face black. Wrestler that got that solid push since probably Booker.
Yeah.
Like Mark Henry's gotten a good push, but that's as the monster heel, and it's fine. It suits him really well.
But I think, you know, because you bring up a really, like, something to really think about, and this isn't a direction that we planned on going, but I'm glad that you kind of brought it up because it's kind of something that I don't think a lot of people touch or they're afraid to touch. You know, you look at Del Rio, and we all know that I'm not saying that Del Rio got his push because, I mean, I guess, yeah, maybe you can say that.
Well, he did.
And me as being a Latino person or someone that has Latino heritage, like, I knew why they do it. I knew why they pushed him, and I knew they were trying to hit a certain market. And I didn't have a problem with them doing that. You know, like, I don't think that Del Rio is inhibited or stop from having a certain type of opportunity or because of his background. I think he's gotten some opportunity because of his background, but at the same time, it's like, look who he's starting to get in a feud with is John Cena. And it's not because he's Latino. It's because he's a good heel. Mm-hmm. And it's just kind of, it's fine. It's one that's, it's like a gray area with anything like a threesome. It's really like a type of gray area. And, you know, you bring up Booker T, and it's the same thing. Like, I have never looked at Booker T as a African-American wrestler or whatever, and they're trying to hit a certain demographic. You know, I quote, you know, the guy that's standing on our desk all the time when we're doing this move scale. It's a WWE action figure of Macho Man, and he cut a great promo saying the cream rises to the top. I think that's really what it is. The cream rises to the top, and you know, it's funny that you bring that up. I never really thought about that. I think you can kind of kill, if you want to, like, kill two birds with one stone, because this guy is really good. And he also happens to be black, too. So if you want to hit that demographic, you know, you can have your cake and eat it, too.
Right. And that's kind of going back to, like, and, you know, I was kind of in and out at the time when Lashley was getting his run. So I can't really say, like, that any of that was racially motivated. But they were trying to push the guy hard, and he just didn't have the goods. Like, he had the look,
yeah,
but he fucking sucked in the ring.
And I think that's what it more was. I think it was more that he had the look. I mean, the guy had, like, a monster physique and stuff.
And then they could also play off the fact that he was, like, that he used to be in the military and stuff like that, and that plays well with wrestling fans and things like that. But no, I mean, I think, like, you know, the word we use every so often is organic, right? Like, this push of Biggie Langston, it makes sense. It's not forced. It's not pushed. It's happening. It's progressing naturally the way that it should. He's put in the work, like, at their developmental level, and they brought him along slowly up at on the big show, the big screen, or whatever you want to say.
Yeah.
I don't want to have your daughter come out and pump her fist on me. But it's slowly progressed. He's really good in the ring. He's got the right personality to be where, like, I mean, he ain't soft by any means, but he has like a funny, like a humorous side to him, which is appealing to people. I mean, I think him as a face is the right move to make, and it's at the right time. And if he gets the push, then great.
Well, you take a look at all the black wrestlers that we have watched, right? None of them, to me, like, I didn't like any. It's not like I liked these guys or didn't like these guys because of what their race was, and none of them had like a black gimmick going on. Like, you have Junkyard Dog, right? Mm-hmm. Junkyard Dog just had natural charisma, mm-hmm. and he was a flipping cool guy, you know. Yeah. Like, he had a good gimmick going with the chains around him and stuff and everything. Mm-hmm. You look at, say, a guy like Bad News Brown. Like, I didn't see, and maybe it's because
Bad News had a certain, like, racial element to him.
Yeah,
but
he was fighting
against the man, basically.
Yeah.
Just some tough street dude from Harlem, which was fine. It wasn't exploitive.
Mm-hmm.
Like, while he played to his heritage, it wasn't, like, in an exploitive way. And I thought that's why it worked. It was a totally believable type of character.
Well, then you take a look at, like, say, and it's kind of funny because you take a look at a guy like Ron Simmons, who's played both ends of the spectrum. You know, he was, like, the first, like, might have been the first WCW or NWA champion that was black. And
definitely the first WCW.
Yeah, yeah, and I don't know if he was the first NWA.
I think he was the first world champion, period.
That was black. Yeah. And, you know, I didn't really follow his run that closely when he won the title. Like, when he won it, I was like, okay, this guy's deserving. And I think he kind of, I don't know if he played, like, the kind of, like, the good, if you will, like, black guy. And for us to, like, to say this, you got to realize that, you know, my man over here is he's part German. He's a Filipino, and his mom's from the islands. So it's like we kind of have a different view on race, especially like in Hawaii. I'm like Japanese, Puerto Rican, Filipino, a little bit of Filipino, not too much, but, you know, white, and then probably a little bit of Filipino. But my grandmother, even though my family doesn't admit to it, I mean, she was a black Puerto Rican. You know, so there's some there, like, now I don't identify with it. You know, I identify with what I know of the way that I was. But me and you, are in a special circumstance where race to us isn't as big of a deal as is to other people, because I think that me and you have been seen a certain way and people don't really know what we are. And I think we've seen racism face on, like right to our face, at least with me. Like, I've had to deal with racism all my life, and I'm not saying, like, oh, you know, it's like, it's made me realize that people are the way that they are. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, I've had every four of my races, they've talked bad about one of my other races. And then you start going through the school system and you start going through, like, military and stuff, and people look at your last name, and my last name is, you know, it's of Hispanic origin. and they think that I'm going to be a certain way because of my last name. And I used to get the Army recruiting calls right before I graduated high school saying, like, hey, you should join the Army, and they'll take you out of the situation you're in. I'm like, yeah, what situation is that? Well, you know, like off the street,
yeah,
and stuff.
The bar, yeah.
And I was like, well, I'm like, my parents own like a $1.5 million house up on a hill. So I think I'm okay with what my situation is. But it's just that kind of that.
Maybe they knew about all the gardening you were doing.
Yeah, yeah.
They were trying to save you from that.
Maybe my parents named me gardening because they wanted me to get in touch back with my roots or something. You know? But so, I mean, it's kind of funny. It's like I've never thought about that. And it's kind of funny to, you know, it's kind of funny to hear you say that, because I know you don't think that way either. And with all respect, the one thing that I know from you is your dad's just like straight, you know, straight German and stuff and everything like that. Born and raised in Iowa. And this guy does not stand for racism whatsoever. You know, he's a very, he's not, if I think I had a conversation with him one time because I was in, we were having a college discussion about Sammy Sosa and Mark McGwire when they're having the home run chase. And the, my professor said, like, well, Sammy Sosa, you know, I don't think people want Sammy Sosa to have the home run title because he's black. And I'm kind of sitting there thinking about it. And I talked to your dad about it. And your dad's like, he's like, where the fuck did you hear that? You know, and your dad, I was like, whoa, hey. I was like, no, this is just like in a class. He's like, I don't believe that at all. He's all that. That has nothing to do with it. And so your dad's always been like a, you know, straight shooter when it comes to stuff like that. And I knew that's how you were raised. So I'm actually pretty mad at you for no, I'm just joking. But, you know, I mean, if we're at a place right now in the wrestling world where WWE wants to push a black superstar without really, like, pushing them, and then they're kind of saying, like, well, the guy does have the goods, and, you know, if we can get that demographic, that's even better. I mean, I think that says a lot, because, I mean, you have Biggie Langston in this company. At the same time, you have a group like the Primetime Players who kind of play up a certain type of stereotype here and there. Not so much, but it's just like, you know, it's more of a case where it's like they're cool, you know, like they're cool, like quote unquote black guys, you know, and Titus O'Neil has the whole Florida thing going with them and stuff, and doing the hoo-hoo-hoo stuff and everything like that. I mean, it works. And then on the opposite spectrum, who do you have? You have R-Truth, who's just like a straight, you know,
stereotype.
He's a walking stereotype, you know. So it's kind of funny. It's just, you know, to kind of temper that and kind of look at that. And then when you kind of compare it to Alberto Del Rio, and then if you even want to, like, go even farther, you have Los Matadors, who are like two Puerto Rican guys playing two Mexican guys. So it's just kind of, you know, it's kind of all across the board. It's just funny that, you know, it's like, it's one thing to say, like, oh, hey, it's good, you know, Biggie Langston, they're able to do this. But at the same time, it's like, yeah, but look at all these other guys here, too. So it's just kind of, as much as stuff is new, there's still stuff that, you know, that's the same. Like, having, like, the bad Japanese guy, or having the bad Russian, mm-hmm. you know, having those type of villains, or having even, like, Kerry, you know, not Kerry Von Erich, but the Von Erichs, you know, like, his dad being, like, a, you know, a bad German. And then you can even go to Zeb Coulter, just being, like, this totally, like, white supremacist racist on the other side. So it's just kind of, just like a fine line of what they're doing. And
yeah, no, it is a fine line. And you know, I think they're playing it well. It's like, cause I mean, if you take it back to what we're talking about, Del Rio, you remember right before Del Rio got his push, the move was we got to push Sin Cara, cause we need someone to take over the Rey Mysterio mantle. We need a Latino superstar. And we talked about how that was a bad idea because it wasn't anything personal against Sin Cara. He's just not very good.
Yeah.
And the idea was, and like the thing I like was, if they're making this decision that they want to hit the demographic, let's take the best guy we have and put him there. And that was Del Rio. And I thought they did the right thing there. And I think it's kind of the same thing here. I'm not saying that that's why he's getting the push, but either way, he deserves everything that he's getting right now. And he's, as JR likes to say, he's maximizing his minutes.
Yeah.
So anything that he gets is well deserved, and I think he's in the right spot because, you know, honestly, it's like they wanted that spot to be Ryback. And I think we talked about this maybe 20 episodes ago, how we were saying, why is Ryback getting this push when Biggie Langston is better in the ring, is better on the mic, and just an overall better performer? If they want some big, like, yoked out monster guy to come through, Langston is the better choice. And I think now they've tried to do the Ryback thing, and they realize it doesn't work. And now Langston is basically assuming the babyface, monster babyface role that Ryback couldn't do and I think he's got a much better chance to succeed.
And the good thing, you know, when it's good that you brought this up, because the more that I think about it with Big E Langston, is that he's doing something that any minority has to face. I mean, you have to face it. You know, you have to face like what you are, like even like with you, you know, as you, with you being a teacher and stuff, you know, it's like, I know there's people that looking at you saying, oh, well, okay, here's a kind of a guy of color, or I don't even know how you say it. I don't even know how to say it because I never said it, you know, but it's like, oh, here's this guy that, you know, can fill a role that, because we kind of want to get more, reflect what our community is. And when I was working in journalism, I'm like, I know for a fact that I've moved up higher in journalism because of my last name. Mm-hmm. But when people really got to know me, they realized that I was actually very good at what I did. So it was really like, it's beneficial for what they wanted to do in terms of having to hit a certain type of demographic within their own company. I mean, I was young. I have a Latino last name. And then at the same time, I could work better than everybody else did. And so it's kind of like he's kind of doing the same thing. He's doing it on his own terms. And I think that's really commendable. I mean, because there was a time I was in a newsroom when I first started out. They had this whole thing called streamlining or whatever it was. And they wanted to have like a certain percentage of minorities in the newsroom. And I actually had the managing editor, who happened to actually be, he was a Mexican guy. And the managing editor and the executive editor. And the executive editor, he's the one that gave me a chance. And it wasn't he gave me a chance because I was Latino. I mean, I think he looked at me and said, look, okay, this guy can deliver, he can deliver work-wise, but at the same time, he's also Latino too. I mean, they actually stood in the newsroom and they started counting how many minorities were in the newsroom. And they're like, well, so we have this much, okay, percentage. Yeah. He's like, we're good. We have a certain percentage that our company, our corporate company is saying that we need to have a certain amount of percentage in our newsroom. Okay, we're fine. We're good. And it's just kind of sitting there going like, so does that mean are you going to hire a white guy as compared to a minority because your numbers are already there. Yeah, so
you already hit the quota.
Yeah, so I mean, but it's just stuff. I mean, stuff you have to deal with all the time. I think it's hard for a minority wrestler to really become a success because they have to. First of all, you have to come in, I think, with a little bit of a chip on your shoulder because you've seen it all before, you've heard it all before. But at the same time, be accepting of what you're trying to do and really trying to do something that someone else hasn't done. And you know, we said Junkyard Dog. Junkyard Dog was the top face in Memphis, and not even Memphis. I think it was Bill Watts' territory, and that was pretty much unheard of. Ernie Ladd, the same way. Ernie Ladd was a successful guy, and he had to go. You know, he had to kind of get past his race, and then you know, so you have Junkyard Dog, Booker T, Bad News. I wouldn't put Bad News Brown in Junkyard Dog's and Booker T's level, but you know. Here you have like Junkyard Dog and Booker T. I think they're some of the all-time greats. But I don't look at them saying like they're some of the all-time greats because they're black. It's like they were good in the ring.
What about Coco?
Coco, hey, he's in the Hall of Fame. You know, I don't. I think
Bird.
I think it was more of a case that WWE wanted to have an animal gimmick. You know, they wanted to represent the macaw. Yeah, or the parrot or whatever it was. Like we don't have enough parrots in the WWE, yeah,
they're like, well, Jake's getting over the snake.
Yeah,
it's like, what if we give the bulldogs a bulldog? And what if we give what's Coco doing?
What's Coco doing?
I think he's writing a song back there. Yeah, it took him about 5 minutes, as Tina said.
Well, his
bird, actually, bird, bird.
No. He wasn't writing bird, bird, bird. He was writing word, 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 word. So it's like, no, you change it to bird, bird, bird. And they're like, what's word? What does that mean?
they didn't get it.
Yeah, they didn't get it, yeah.
Another one, we mentioned Ron Simmons, but his partner, The Natural, Butch Reed. Like, Doom was a really good tag team.
Doom was a good tag team.
And you don't look at them as like, well, they were a black tag team. Those guys were just a couple of badasses.
Yeah.
And like, Butch Reed is a really unsung guy, but Butch Reed was like you know, he's probably one of the, he could have, if he came along at a different time, perhaps that guy could have made a lot bigger name for himself and what he did, because that dude was pretty talented.
I think the problem with Butch Reed, and this kind of goes to Flair's book, but he was talking about the Steiners, and we talked about the Steiners a couple weeks ago, And the one thing he said about the Steiners was, like, the Steiners like to really show off that they had, like, an amateur background. And so they're in the back room, and the Steiners were just fucking with Butch Reed, like, tying him up or taping him up or something like that with, like, athletic tape. And Flair kind of looks at Ron Simmons. He's like, hey, what would happen if the Steiners try to fuck with you? And he looks at Ric Flair, and he's like, Flair, he's like, I'm unfuckable. So then Flair was like, okay, dude.
And then Flair looked at him and said, damn!
damn! So, all right, so here we are, Movie Skill 50, we're half an hour in, haven't really talked about anything. So, I mean, let's do something here, dude. Let's release your Delph or something. I was kind of thinking of, like, maybe, like, your top, like, five favorite entrance songs of all time or something like that, or top three even, or something, you know, something that kind of really, because when we started this whole thing off,
let me go in a different way, and it's going to be a negative sort of, but we always talk about all these guys that we like, and, you know, we talk about the current events and stuff, guys that we liked back then that didn't get the credit that they deserved, but then there's like this kind of like also like these guys that are considered legends that we kind of look at him and say, this guy wasn't shit, right? So I would say, who's your, like, top, maybe, give me any one to three top most overrated wrestlers.
I'm kind of at a loss, but go ahead.
I'll get the ball rolling, because okay. I got the one in my mind. To me, the most overrated wrestler is Rowdy Roddy Piper.
Yeah.
Okay, like, I think the only thing he had going, and not to bring it back to race, but He had the crazy Scottish gimmick, and people liked that, especially like the demographic that was wrestling fans in the 70s and the 80s. But I mean, the guy, he didn't have a look, okay? He didn't have any kind of moveset at all.
He was a good talker.
He was a solid talker, but could get he got pretty annoying pretty quickly. But I mean, all he had was a bunch of like half-ass punches and an eye poke. I don't think I've ever seen him do anything more than that. And then for him, you know, to beat Hulk Hogan, like, there's no way, you know, you're talking about two guys that have no moveset at all, but one guy's, like, half the size and not particularly strong. Like, there is no way that should have ever happened. Like, because people put him on the short list of greatest that ever did it that didn't win a world title. I don't think, I could probably come up with 50 guys that deserved a title run more than Rowdy Roddy Piper did. And I just think, yeah, as a talker, sure, you know, I'll give him his due there, but he really had nothing else going on in the ring as a performer, I don't think.
Yeah, so I agree. He has some really weak, lame punches, really lame spots. Like, he'd, like, just go all crazy and just do, like, these little, like, rabbit punches here and there, and that was supposed to, like, really knock a guy down and make it go crazy.
Yeah, for a guy who's 6'1 and 220 doing a bunch of rabbit punches to the abs.
Yeah.
Like, what is that?
Not only that, but, I mean, he would even do, like, he'd do the soft shoe on your face, too, you know? He'd just do, like, these soft little punches. I never really understood what people saw in that guy. I think it really credited to, I think he had a lot of backroom pull. I mean, I think he was a big time partier. So I think that really won him a lot of respect in the back with the boys and put him in a spot where he was. I thought his mic skills were good. They would kind of get played out, and, you know, cause I mean, he had the Piper's Pit, which was kind of groundbreaking at the time.
Sure.
And people loved it when he would go off on people. I thought the worst of it that ever happened was, and what really kind of turned me off to him, because I really didn't know that much about Roddy because I wasn't watching it.
Jimmy
but it was, yeah. I mean, that thing's legendary. That's not the one I'm talking about. It's when he had it was Robert Downey, that talk show host.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's just like, man, with Brother Love. And it's just like, dude, I'm like, what the hell is this? You know, I'm like, I'm supposed to get all hyped up because he hits. I don't even know what happened. I was just like, man, hurry the hell up. That was like wrestling. That is like wrestling at its worst. That was like one of the worst segments I've ever seen in my life. And I think it was like, it was on a pay-per-view. And I'm just sitting going like, dude, I'm like, what the hell is this? It's like a mismatch now. It's like a mismatch or Great Khali match. So you're talking about Roddy Piper. You know, if you would have asked me probably about 3-4 years ago, I probably would have said Hitman Hart. You know, I was never really a big fan of Hitman. But the guy's too good in the ring to put him in there. The one guy that I would probably put in there and not even worry about it would be Sting. I think Sting is one of the most, probably the most overrated superstar probably of all time. I mean, he had like a good, when he first came out and when Flair put him over And when he had the whole kind of surfer gimmick going and stuff and like that, I mean, he was hot. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was like, I mean, I remember watching this guy going like, yeah, this guy, you know, this guy's good, you know, and he had the fan interaction. It was just, he was at the right place at the right time for that gimmick. But then it's just like, then like 3-4 years down the line, he doesn't improve in the ring. He doesn't have guys like Flair made him look like $1 million. And when you have, and see, people like to bag on Flair a lot. Like a lot of people, like, oh, he always does the same match, this, that, and this, that, and this. But he's made stars out of guys. He made a star out of Sting. And then once they stopped working, you know, Flair stopped working with Sting, he never really brought the goods. And then I think, again, it was the right place, right time. He did the whole Crow gimmick during the versus the NWO, and they had a really strong year run where like he was fighting the NWO all the time, this, that, and this. But he got the title. What did he do with it? He didn't do anything with it. And now he was good on the mic when he first came out because nobody was good on the mic. And then he keeps on coming on the mic again. It's like, dude, you haven't changed at all.
Got any better? Yeah.
Yeah, you haven't changed. And then the moves that you used to do, like, you know, like the Stinger Splash, right? You hate the Stinger Splash. I've seen the Stinger Splash when it was good, when he used to do it good.
No, yeah.
And
no,
but he can't do it anymore.
Right. Well, and that's the thing to me was like his athleticism left him extremely early in his career. Like, you know, a lot of these guys, they stayed relatively athletic, you know, pretty close to their 40s. Whereas he really peaked out around 30 or in his early 30s. And then
I'd say younger than that. I'd say probably 26, 27.
Maybe so, but like, I mean, he had like when he was had the blonde hair and stuff like that. I mean, yeah, he used to get a lot of elevation on that splash, and yeah, not too long thereafter. I mean, dude, he got nothing. It was as bad a splash as anybody for. And you know, if you're only coming in at 240 pounds, you better get some elevation on your corner splash. Right, if you're really gonna get like clear 1 foot off the ground, then you better be a 300 pounder. And he didn't have enough athleticism to be really separate himself.
Well, he did tear his knee up though too. I mean, he tore his knee out, and that really limited what he could do. But as a wrestler, go ahead.
Well, I'll say if that's the case and you lose your athleticism, then you better start coming with some kind of power base of moves. And he never did that. And even honestly, his Scorpion Deathlock never looked good. Like compared to, and I mean, I know it's like a reverse of the sharpshooter, but it never looked anywhere near as good as what Bret Hart put. I mean, Natalya puts a better sharpshooter on than Sting ever did, I think.
Okay, so I gave you Sting. You have someone else after that?
Let's see. I mean, Piper was. I mean, there's the obvious ones like Goldberg and Warrior.
Well, yeah, we can talk about those guys.
All right. Well, I mean, they're both essentially in the same boat. I mean, they're these two guys that were pretty much roided out, really strong, but couldn't talk and couldn't work a match, had no ring psychology. It was just... And Warrior, I can sort of excuse in some ways, because at the time, that was the prototype, right? He was basically supposed to take up the mantle of Hulk Hogan. And the thing was, if you had this really big, strong guy, the formula was that would work. But I don't think, I think they underrated Hogan's mic skills. And it wasn't, at the time, mic skills weren't as vital as what they've become in the industry. Okay, but I think Warrior might have been the point when they realized, hey, we can't have some guy that can just bench press the world and give him the belt if he can't cut a promo. I think that's where they probably started realizing, you know, these guys have to be able to get up there and speak on the mic intelligently for a little while.
See, the funny thing is, like, when the Warrior was coming up, and I'm not one to say that his promos ever worked, because I remember watching those promos going, like, first, because I didn't like him in the first place.
Right.
And so I watched his promos, I was like, what the hell is this guy saying? But at the time, when he was coming up, before he won that title, his promos worked. And then I think his kiss of death was when he faced Hulk Hogan for the championship, and he started talking about going to the cockpit and like eating his kids, or oh, that might have been Mike Tyson, but there's something about like, you know, ripping his heart out and showing it to his kids or rubbing it in their faces or something. It's just like, dude, I'm like, what the hell? You're like, you're supposed to be the face, dude. It's like, this is your time, and the best promo you can come up with is that you're going to go into Hulk Hogan's cockpit. First of all, you're going to come from somewhere. You're going to rip open the plane and like chop off his foot and feed it to his mouth, and then like feed it to his kids. And it's just like, it made no sense. It's like, So that to me, that was really his downfall. And then when he had to become champion, and then he had to like be like the main promo guy, we all know what happened with that.
It devolved from there.
Yeah, it went pretty bad. One thing I wanted to say about Goldberg was I actually saw Goldberg in Starrcade when it was at the Cow Palace over here. And, you know, I'll admit, dude, I mean, when he had about three or four really good moves. I mean, his spear when it first came out, it was a good spear. I'm not going to say, you know, it got boring really fast. When you see it 50 times and then all of a sudden he becomes 150-0 after like 2 weeks.
After I already saw him lose to McMichael.
Yeah. Now, was it McMichael that he lost to? Yeah, he did.
He stole the Super Bowl ring. Yeah. And they had a little feud. And then he lost one of those matches. And that's when, after that, they decided they'd put him on this streak, so he was allegedly undefeated.
Yeah.
You know, fighting Mike Knox 25 times in a row.
Was it Mike Knox or Mike Steele?
Both.
Yeah. So, but, I mean, when we were there, when he put those moves on, I mean, the crowd popped. I mean, and I popped too. I'm not going to say that I didn't. I mean, it was a display of, like, of physicality that was really good. But at the same, so it's kind of like the same thing, like, there was, like, when you liked the Warrior, you liked the Warrior because he was all yoked out. You liked his press that he did. You know, you liked...
I liked the tassels.
And you liked the shoulder block. You know.
Shoulder... It was a lot better than Cena's.
Yeah, definitely. No, I mean, the thing is, like, he had, like, three or four good moves. I thought Goldberg had three or four moves that were a whole lot better. Mm-hmm. But he never progressed in his craft. Like, he could only do one match. And that's really kind of the downfall of both of those guys. So,
Well, and it goes back to this thing of being a mark for yourself also in that, okay, well, I'm stronger than everybody, so I'm just going to throw people around as hard as I can. You know, that's not how the business works. And one thing that Bret Hart's always taken pride in is that he always says, I've never hurt anybody in the ring. And you know, it's a work, right? You don't have to go and try to slam a guy on the ground as hard as you can. You know, that doesn't show you're a professional. Right, which shows you're professionals. If you can make this move look believable, and everybody gets up and walks away at the end. Okay, and I mean, you know, for those that don't know, I mean, Goldberg effectively ended Bret Hart's career and damn near killed him because he's reckless in the ring.
Yeah, so I got a guy who can be pretty polarizing too, and I kind of want to get your take on it. The guy that I never understood ever was Undertaker. I have never understood this guy's appeal, and I supposedly stopped watching wrestling when he started expanding his moveset, when he started doing Hell's Gate and started doing some MMA stuff. But I have never understood this guy's appeal, ever. I've never gotten into his kind of undead gimmick, him sitting up and facing all this stuff. The match that he had with Hogan the very first time out where he started sitting up to all of Hogan's stuff and everything. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was fine. But I think the thing that really hurts me with The Undertaker is that The Undertaker, he has kind of incorporated new moves like The Last Ride. The Last Ride was hot for 5 seconds. The choke slam, you know, he was able to kind of take a choke slam and make it his own. I think Kane does a better choke slam from hell than Undertaker does. I think the Tombstone is one of the weakest moves ever. And even
really?
Back... Yeah, it's not... I don't know, dude. I mean, it's just one of those moves that is just totally fake, dude. I mean, and I knew when he put it on, I knew that there was no sense of realism to it. I just never liked it. And I've never understood the guy's appeal. I hate his flipping entrances. I hate how it takes him 20 minutes to get in the ring. I have just never understood it. I respect Undertaker more for what he's done in the back, as kind of being like the judge in the back, than anything he's ever done in the ring. There's not one Undertaker match that I've watched that I said, like, wow, what a great match. You know, it's like he had the CM Punk match. Well, I thought CM Punk did the job for The Undertaker. I mean, I was more impressed with what CM Punk did. I don't think Undertaker elevated CM Punk because you knew CM Punk. And granted, he's old already. You know, Undertaker's old. But I think he's faced, like, Kane, like, 55 times during that streak, during WrestleMania. Mm-hmm. And those are some of the most boring matches I've ever seen. Undertaker versus Kane. And I think, like, even our boy Mike Oz, who writes for Yahoo Sports, you know, we watched a pay-per-view together one time. He's like, Kane versus Undertaker. I was like, I've never seen that match before. Yeah. You know, so it's just like, it's like a 20-minute match where you're just like, that's where you can go get a couple beers, you know, and like, you know, it's like, hey, let me go get you a beer. And saying like, hey, can you give me a beer because I want to watch this match? Like, hey, let me get you a beer, you know, because there's nothing really going on. So that's another guy that I've never really appreciated.
So I've never been a fan of the Undertaker gimmick. The two times that I was the most interested in him was in WCW when he was Mean Mark Callis. I thought that worked really well. And when he left the Undertaker gimmick behind for a while, when he was doing the American Badass, I thought the American Badass was, well, that was by far my favorite iteration of the Undertaker. I think the thing with him was when he first started out, when he was Mean Mark, and then the early years of Undertaker, there wasn't too many guys at that 6'10 that were as athletic as he was. I think as time has gone on, and he stood the test of time, but you've seen all these other guys coming in at 6'8", 2", somewhere in that 7-foot range that are like far superior athletically to him, and it kind of diminishes like how we perceive him. But I think he was really unique at his time, like, because, you know, like, look at his, who's his contemporaries is like Kane,
Kevin Nash,
and while I'm a much bigger fan of Kevin Nash than I am of Undertaker, there's no denying that Undertaker was way more agile and athletic and had a more varied moveset than what Kevin Nash did. And I thought Nash was a way better power guy, and a much more believable character. And that was the thing, like, you know, we had progressed past like the gimmicky, like,
earn and get some power and stuff.
Right, and all that stuff at the time when they were still holding on to it, and which is what The Undertaker was. But I think his early years, he was a really good performer, and I think just kind of a guy that has held on a little long. And I don't know that it's necessarily because that's what he wants to do as much as I think the WWE is trying to milk him for every dollar that they can get out of him.
Yeah, it's not a case of I don't like him because he's held on too long. I mean, we've seen this guy in San Jose Arena at a house show. And by
Mabel,
far...
Mabel?
Was it against Mabel?
I think he was fighting...
Yeah.
He was fighting Adam Bomb.
Adam Bomb, yeah.
It was Adam Bomb.
Yeah, and... he definitely got the biggest pop of the night. And I'm looking around, and I'm kind of seeing all these, like, hillbillies from San Jose. I'm like, man, I've never seen so many, like, white trash people hanging out here in San Jose. And here we are. We just talked about this race with Biggie Langston and how I've been hurt by racism. I'm starting to call everybody, you know, these white trash hillbillies in San Jose. And then, man, they went nuts for the guy. And I'm going, like, okay, he's a spectacle. You know, it's like, yeah, he's unique in what he does. I just never bought into it. You know, we talk about, like, kind of like these gimmicky things is, like, yeah, he came at a time, and I think if he would have been in the early 80s, I probably would have looked at him a little bit different because cartoon wrestling was, like, the norm.
Right.
He was still cartoon wrestling when we're starting to kind of shift towards the Attitude Era.
Right.
I don't think he ever got his place in the Attitude Era. Mm-hmm. I think my favorite time of his was when it was the corporate ministry. But why? It was more because of McMahon and kind of all these other guys that were there within that thing. He's always been, like... I'll give him credit. He's always been like the benchmark. You know, it's like he's always been the guy. Like, if you had your top baby face and if he had to face the Undertaker, you're like, okay, well, wait a minute. You know, like the baby face is pretty much going to set up to fail. I mean, I think The Rock has faced him and The Rock lost to him. Mm-hmm. But the whole thing is that who came out a winner in that whole feud? It was The Rock. It wasn't the Undertaker because he couldn't, on the mic, he couldn't adapt. He had to stay in character.
He had a script. He had to stick.
Stick to it. And you know, I don't think that's really because of him. I think you're right. I think it is because of the WWE. But the whole thing is like, look, if you're this big judge in the back, and if you have all this weight in the back room, well, how come you don't want to be who you are? And I think the American Badass was a kind of thing of that. And you're right, the American Badass was good.
That was probably the closest to him being himself that he ever. He was able to do in WWE was the American Badass gimmick, and you know, I think maybe we're kind of maybe we look at Undertaker in a similar way we look at Triple H, that we're not like the greatest fans of him as a character, but I think we respect both of the guys because of the love of the business and the contributions that they've made, even though in the ring they weren't necessarily our favorite performers to watch, but they have definitely carved out a lasting legacy for their place in the industry.
And one thing that I'll give Undertaker for too, all the tasks that you see in wrestling, you know, he was when tattoos really took off in the 90s and stuff, and everybody got either the barbed wire or the tribal tattoo or whatever it was. this guy was in Tattoo Magazine. I mean, this
yeah, dude was sleeved up before.
Yeah,
sleeves,
yeah.
But when Randy Orton was rocking the barbed wire.
Yeah, I mean, just, yeah.
And talking about how his shoulder was 76% healed.
Yeah, yeah, all that stuff.
He had
yeah.
the full sleeve already.
So I mean, he's broken ground in ways that I don't think he's tried to. But I mean, kind of the look of the wrestler and stuff and everything like that. I think he kind of embodies that, and I think he really, you know, I don't know if you have, I mean, you look at kind of tattoos and, you know, you look at wrestling, and I think wrestlers made tattoos really kind of, they made it kind of acceptable to have. I mean, you see all these guys week in and week out. You have a bunch of young guys, like 18 to 20-year-old guys, looking at all these wrestlers that have tattoos and stuff, and it's like, and I still remember, like, one of my relatives saying, like, oh, don't, because it's like, I want to get a tattoo. You know, this is just, I wanted to get one. This is before it took off. It's probably about 2-3 years before it took off. And I had a family member say, like, only sailors get tattoos. And I was like, what the hell are you talking about?
Yeah.
I was like,
no, my dad's thing was only prisoners get tattoos.
Yeah. Yeah. See.
But what I thought your thing was only sailors wear condoms.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Only sailors wear condoms, baby.
not in the 90s. They should, those filthy beggars. They go from port to port. All right, so, I'll throw one more guy in here. And, you know, I should probably be careful because, you know, this guy's known to come after you if you besmirch his reputation. But I never saw the appeal of the Honky Tonk Man. I didn't think the guy could work. I thought he had one of the weakest finishers I have ever seen in wrestling. And then for him to go on and have, like, one of, if not the greatest intercontinental title run at a time when the intercontinental belt actually meant something. I just never understood, like, I mean, I know there's like a certain segment of the population concentrated in a certain area that would think an Elvis gimmick was pretty cool or whatever. But I thought the guy sucked all around,
yeah.
To be honest. The promos were dumb. Ring work was mediocre at best.
He even came out with Irene for a while too, right? His finish was called, like, Goodnight Irene or something like that?
No, that's Adrian Adonis with the sleeper.
Okay, all right.
Honky Tonk was the Shaker Allen roll. It
yeah.
was just your average run-of-the-mill,
yeah, yeah.
rudimentary neck breaker.
I thought there was some fat chick that came out with him one time.
Yeah, that was Adrian Adonis. Yeah, no, that was Greg the Hammer Valentine.
Okay.
I'm just kidding.
Come on, man. I like Greg the Hammer Valentine.
Love the Hammer.
I don't know what else to say. The guy that also didn't like him, too, that didn't think much of him, was your boy Bret Hart. And Honky Tonk Man came from the Memphis territory, same territory as Jerry Lawler.
Right,
and
they had a pretty big feud, I think. Yeah, I think,
yeah.
If I'm not mistaken.
Well, whatever it was, but one thing that, you know, because Bret has always been a proponent of, like, I'm never going to do anything in the ring that doesn't make sense. You know, like, that's why, like, he would run into the turnbuckles or whatever it was, you know, face first, because he's like, well, why would I turn around, just that and this? Mm-hmm. And, but he said, like, When they started kind of bringing guys from Memphis, he's like, man, he's like, these guys are soft and gimmicky, you know, and he's talking about Honky Tonk Man. He's like, this guy's just soft. It's like, you can just, like, pretty much do whatever you want to do with this guy in the ring because he doesn't know what the hell he's doing. and he's soft. You know, he's like, I have to work with this guy. You know, it's like, here I am, like, trying to bring legitimacy to a sport, something that, like, my dad Stu did and all the guys that he used to bring in. And then I have to work with a guy like Honky Tonk who can't do a lick of anything. And I think Memphis is just its own little beast because he was a big star in Memphis. Lawler was a big star in Memphis. And
Jarrett.
Huh? Jarrett, I mean, but at least I'm not a big fan of Jeff Jarrett, but the thing is that the guy...
There was a time when he could work.
Yeah, I mean, he could work, and he improved from what he was before, because when he came out as Double J, oh, God, that was terrible. And then he kind of, during his second run, I thought he had a really good run, and I think he was at the wrong place at the wrong time, because when he went to WCW, they needed someone. They needed, like, a heel, kind of like, all like, kind of like a...
Well, he was a bad Ric Flair impression, is what he was.
Yeah.
And that's all I ever thought of Jeff Jarrett. Just, this is a bad Ric Flair impression.
So the other guy, so we can finish it off, he's current now, AJ Styles. I just don't get the appeal of this guy.
AJ can work, dude. The guy puts on a good match, dude. I know what you're saying. I'm not a big fan of AJ, and I think of all the, like, guys that have been loyal to TNA and have been there, like, from the beginning, there's, like, why you wouldn't hang your hat on Samoa Joe as opposed to AJ Styles, I'll never understand. But at least I'll give him the fact that he can work. He can't talk. He looks kind of like a goof. But the guy puts on a good match. He's like the Jeff Hardy of TNA. It's like and Hardy's completely done now, but in Hardy's day, the guy could put on a good match. But he's got nothing now. How they ever attached the name Charismatic to any kind of moniker that he has, I'll never understand.
Would you put Jeff Hardy in that list too?
So, there was a time when Jeff Hardy was good.
Yeah,
and that was when the Hardy Boys were going, and when they had all the 3-way matches with Edge and Christian, and with the Dudleys. I thought it all worked. I never thought Jeff Hardy worked as a singles wrestler. I thought he had the potential to be possibly like the next Shawn Michaels for a while, just based on his work alone. But once he went solo and he tried to cut promos, it was just terrible.
Yeah, and then you had all that weak-ass paint on him and stuff that never really made sense to me either. It's like, dude, I'm like, you don't need all this paint on your face. I'm like, you're pretty good in the ring. And yeah, and it's like, and I think it's one of those cases where he thought that he had to cut a certain promo to be successful, especially in WWE, and he couldn't do it. And there's probably about maybe a show where he actually like cut a decent promo. It's like, I think it's when Lita went against McMahon and McMahon flipped out and they put the Hardy Boys against like the top guys. And Jeff was like, he's like, yeah, let's do it. You know, it's like, why not? I mean, this is an opportunity. It's not because Matt was like, well, why the hell did you do this for Lita and all that stuff? Mm-hmm. And he wasn't talking about Edge. But then he goes like, well, you know, it's an opportunity. And I thought that worked when he was more close to who he was. I thought it worked. So,
yeah, well, put it this way, when you're relying on
Matt, it was one show.
Yeah. When you're relying on Matt to cut your promos for you, you having hard times, my friend.
So, yeah. So, I think that's who do we have? So we have Roddy, Sting, Ultimate Warrior, Goldberg, Undertaker,
Honky Tonk,
and AJ Styles, and then
with a
splash, with the splash of Jeff Hardy.
Yeah. Okay. That's good. All right. So now we talked about all these guys that suck. Maybe we should just go straight into the Hall of Kayfabe.
Okay.
Okay, so there's no spoiler here. You mentioned him a week or two ago. He's been on the list for a while. I was just waiting for the right time. And
number 50, right?
Yeah, I think 50 is the time.
No, it better be the guy I think
it is. Yeah. Okay. The one Blue Blazer.
There you go.
The King of Hearts, Owen Hart, posthumously, obviously. Owen Hart was just a really good wrestler, a really good performer. A little more charisma than Bret, but pretty much the same ability within the ring.
More acrobatic by far.
Not as good technically, but still really good technically. Yeah, way more acrobatic. And the thing that was really good with Owen is he, unlike Bret, he had several different characters, and pretty much every character he did worked. The Blue Blazer, when he first came in, it worked. When he was a member of the Nation of Domination, and just this
as crazy, the Blackheart,
yeah,
I am the Blackheart,
yeah. Or I am Knots and Nuggets,
yeah,
right. Like all of these different versions of him worked, and I think it spoke a lot to he was versatile in the ring, and he was versatile in terms of the persona that he needed to play, and I thought you could kind of put him in any kind of match, and he was going to be good. I liked Owen Hart. I always liked Owen Hart.
Had a ton of respect in the back, one of the best rivers of all time. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like if you got ribbed by Owen, you were somebody, you know.
if you were ribbed by the best.
Yeah. The one thing I want to ask you, and this is always kind of, it's not that it's bothered me, but as technically gifted this guy was, and knowing that this guy knew how to wrestle and take care of opponents, the one thing that always bothered me about it, that always kind of made me question, maybe the conspiracy theorist comes out of me, is that the DDT that he did on Stone Cold. I mean, because if you ever see...
Pile driver.
Yeah, I'm sorry. The pile driver they did on Stone Cold. Because if you look at that pile driver, I mean, his head was, like, totally exposed.
Yeah, about 3 inches.
Yeah, and so, I mean, is it a case where, like, he slipped or, like, he didn't have a good hold on... I just never understood. I didn't know if there was anything, like, going on with that, but it's kind of like... And the whole thing is that Stone Cold had a lot of respect for Bret Hart. Bret Hart had a ton of respect for Stone Cold. But at the same time, Stone Cold, to me, really kind of diminished Bret Hart a little bit. You know, once Stone Cold started taking off and he was, like, in his prime of taking off, and all of a sudden it gets turned off like that because of that botch. I never really understood that. So I kind of want to know what you think about it.
I mean, I wouldn't think... It doesn't seem to fit with... everything that Owen was purported to be. I wouldn't think he would have done it on purpose. And I think we even talked about this a few back, too. That I didn't know at the time, but Stone Cold actually broke Chono's neck with the pile driver. And Stone Cold is also kind of known as one of the more safe workers out there, too. So, I mean, I think it's a case where I would have to believe it's an accident. I mean, as good as these guys are, you know, there's always, you know, it's a physical business where you're pulling off moves like that. You know, it's bound to happen, you know, from time to time. So I wouldn't think that he did it on purpose.
Yeah, I don't think he did it on purpose either. But it's just kind of, I mean, you got to admit, it's always kind of in the back of your mind, though, right?
Yeah, well,
at least it's in the back of your mind.
Well, right? At the time, because I was still kind of like
WCW.
And that, and I was still, you know, I knew it was a work, but, you know, I was still kind of trying to figure out what exactly was a work and what wasn't. And it was still kind of cloudy at the time. It was before they came to the
yeah.
whole.
You're talking about him actually being hurt, whether that was a work or not, right?
Yeah, or just, yeah, and yeah, like that, like him being hurt and how much people disliked each other in the back was still kind of, like, foggy to me. So at the time, I think it was a little bit more questionable where you could say, well, maybe, you know, you could connect the dots with Brett and say, yeah, well, maybe there is something to it. But kind of as the business has been exposed more, the kind of person that everyone always says that Owen is. I mean, if you hear Stone Cold talk about Owen, man, he's got nothing but love and respect for Owen, especially if you listen to that the podcast with Bret Hart, you know, and they're going back and forth and telling stories. I mean, Stone Cold's he's no bullshitter, so if he had any inkling that there was intent there, I don't think he'd be kissing ass on Owen Hart the way that he did. So,
to go more positive then, I just wanted because I think you need to bring that up. But when he first came out as the Blue Blazer and the moves that he was doing, I mean, this guy was doing like standing flips out of arm bars, mm-hmm. and just the stuff that he was doing, it was like you kind of knew about luchadors, you kind of knew about that, like he was. Like, pretty much, like, kind of like a glorified luchador, but he could actually, like, back it up because he actually had, like, really strong moves, and he was built in a way. He was stocky where it was believable. But you talk about not getting runs. I mean, when he came out, I think every wrestling fan was like, man, what about this Blue Blazer guy? This guy is something else. And then he disappears.
Yeah.
And you don't see him for a long time. And mm-hmm. it's kind of a thing where McMahon had to cut ship and, you know, chop contracts out, and he's one of the guys on the floor. And, but, I mean, that guy was totally primed for an intercontinental run.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, it's like, of course, you know, you have what happened to him, you know, dying in the ring with everything that happened. But you want to talk about guys that was, like, ready for a run. I mean, he was kind of going back to Blue Blazer, so I don't know how far of a run he was going to go back if he had to go back to his old gimmick of before. He was a guy that did business. You know, he did business, and he did whatever was asked of him. One thing that Hart did say was that Bret Hart didn't like the direction that wrestling was going because he wanted to be more family friendly. He thought it was too risque. Mm-hmm. And he was saying that Owen was kind of feeling that way too. And that's probably the reason he's kind of saying, alluding to that. Well, actually, he doesn't allude to it. He says that Owen went back to the Blue Blazer gimmick because he didn't want to be part of the whole kind of R-rated type or
attitude area.
Yeah, he wanted to be part of that kind of where people are just doing crazy things for no reason, mm-hmm. and that's why he's trying to be like a hero, you know, so kids could like him and stuff. But we'll never know where this guy would have been. I mean, I think he would have been at least maybe a 2 or 3 time champion by now. He'd still probably be in the ring now.
Probably still would be wrestling. Yeah. You think?
Well, I don't know because his kids were really important to him. I think like.
But you think he would have got at least a couple world title
runs. I think he would have got like one, at least one run. Maybe, I don't know. I mean, it's kind of, because you had to go against Stone Cold, you had to go against The Rock. I could see him being like a good heel champion and have a good run as a heel champion.
You know what could have been some great matches? Owen and Jericho. Like when Jericho came over to WWE, Owen probably would have been primed at that time.
Yeah.
I think those guys could have done some good work together. Owen and The Rock. That could have worked together. I just like the fact that, you know, you got this really militant group of black dudes, and he's the one guy that's down with them all
with his danger suit.
Yeah, with the yellow caution tape on it. Yep. But it worked. That's the thing. It's like it's like the most out of place thing that you could imagine. Like this corny looking white Canadian little dude walking out with all these big ass militant black guys, and he just fits right in just because he's the craziest guy out of the whole group.
And him playing heel as being like the little brother against Bret Hart worked really well. Probably my favorite thing that he ever did. And it kind of got squashed because they brought back the whole Canadian team and everything like that. But he won like two slammies. And
he'd always bring him out.
But he'd walk out with the British Bulldog, right? Yeah. And so of course, like the British Bulldog was the main draw. And all of a sudden, you see this guy like run in front of the British Bulldog in front of the camera and just hold these two slammies up and like get like.
I think he had it like printed on his tights too. Two-time slammy.
But he'd come out in front of. He'd totally take like a British Bulldog's FaceTime on camera and just like two slammies and stuff. So I always thought that worked really well. So. It was a long time coming with him getting in there. I think it being the 50th show, that's the biggest tragedy in wrestling. I mean it's kind of like one of those things. At least for me, I knew exactly where I was when I heard that he died. And the thing was I was doing an internship. It was an internship program, so it was probably about 80 young journalists as part of this, and we're going all over the country.
In Carolina?
It was
Virginia
in,
or something like that?
It was in Virginia, yeah. Yeah, it was tri-state area. And one of the guys, you know, because you meet everybody, you know. So here the thing was I was in an internship. I was in the highest paying internship, like here in San Jose. Like I was going to make bank that summer. And I did make bank that summer. And, you know, being a 20 some odd year old kid making $1,500 a week, you know, that's pretty flipping good, you know, at that age. And it wasn't $1,500 a week, probably $1,500 every 2 weeks or whatever it was, but it was still pretty good because like some of these people weren't even getting paid. There wasn't even a paid internship. They're doing it for free. And here I was like getting the most paid out of everybody. I'm like, hey, how much are you making? Like, oh, I'm making like, you know, $350 a week. I'm like, really? Yeah. Cause I'm making $800 a week. Yeah. What's up with that? Right. So, you know, so I just threw, I mean, I was just meeting everybody. Like I didn't care. Like I was drinking and I knew how to party. So like, you know, after, cause we'd have to spend like 8 hours, like listening to people talk and stuff, like really good stuff. And, the first time like, hey, let's go party and all this stuff. And, you know, it was a De La Hoya fight. And I got it for free because it was part of the hotel had a free HBO. I'm like, hey, everybody's going to come to my place, bring your own beer and stuff. And the coordinator, you know, she was there too. I'm like, hey, you know, come on in and, you know, come sit with us. Let's, you know, let's drink a couple of beers and stuff. Like, I didn't care. And so one of the guys I kind of became friends with in a span of like 2 days, he's like, hey, man, he's like, Bret Hart died. I'm like, what the hell are you talking about? He's all, well, it was a pay-per-view. I'm like, nah. I'm like, no, that's a work. He's like, no, dude, he's really dead. And then I saw it like the next day in the paper. It's like, wrestler dies. And I was like, geez. So I knew exactly where I was.
He said Bret or he said Owen?
I'm sorry, Owen. Yeah. Owen, yeah. So do you remember where you were when that happened?
I think I was at Poly. I think it was my third year.
Actually, I called you, didn't I?
Yeah, I think I was in. I think that was the year I was living with Rodel, Sup Rhodes, because that was the year I started watching wrestling again. That was right around when the NWO came back, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So yeah, that was the year, and then that would have been. Let's see, 94.
I don't know.
No, like 96, 97.
No, it was more. It was going to be. It's like 98, about 98, 99, because that's when I was. I remember the years that I was in the paper, and that was the year that I was kind of, I was already executive editor, and then I was coming back as sports, so it was like 98, 99 mm-hmm. when that happened. I remember I called you, too. That was one of those times, just like,
yeah.
You know, you can't talk to each other on Twitter, so I'd give you a call, and I didn't even have a cell phone. You did, but I had to go, I'm like, hey, let me use someone's phone or something like that.
You sure had a cell? You sure didn't page me?
I might have paged you. Like, I was like, oh, I paged you. I was like,
911.
No, I paged you, boobless.
Boobless, call me back, 911.
So yeah, so you know, not to make light of it, but it's one of those things that, you know, it's like to this day, dude. It's like, man, it's like,
yeah,
it's like, what the hell, you know? It's like you have Hart, and then I think to me, then you have like Benoit. After that, but Hart's still up there. So that was like a huge loss, just because, you know, he had two young kids. You know, he was doing everything right. He was making a good living for himself.
Yeah, because I mean, you know, and as many wrestlers have died over the years, a lot of it has been self-inflicted wounds. You know what I mean? And Owen was a guy that seemed to be doing everything on the up and up, and it was just like a tragedy that.
It didn't need to happen. Because
right.
It was a product of the Attitude Era. you know, they're always trying to one-up everybody. It didn't need to happen.
Right. And yeah, but it wasn't like he was out there doing something seedy and then it caught up to him, right? Like a lot of the other guys that passed.
And I think that's the biggest thing that bothered me. It's like, what does he gain from coming down from the rafters? You know, there's nothing to gain from that. Mm-hmm. You know, like Michaels did it.
Well, all it was because of Sting. Yeah, it's because Sting was doing it in WCW.
Yeah, it didn't make any sense for me. It was just like one of those things that you didn't with a performer like him. You didn't need to do that because he was the flipping Blue Blazer. You knew you were going to see a great match. It's like you don't need to add that catwalk dive or whatever it was that he did. So yeah, it was senseless, and I think that's the worst thing out of all of it. So. So one thing we've been trying to do, we've added a couple things here. We did Mean 101 for a while, which I really enjoyed. We've done Hall of Kayfabe, which you've kind of fostered. The other thing that we started doing was like talking about matches that we remember. So I've kind of come up with the matches that over the past couple weeks. Is there a match that you want to talk about that you remember and the reason behind it, whether it's good storytelling or...
I'm kind of fuzzy on like some of these old matches. It's like I remember like some of these events and stuff. And so like I don't remember a lot of the details on certain like some of the bigger matches I do.
Well, let's do this then.
I don't have a specific.
So let's do WrestleMania 5, Macho Man versus was it 5 or 6? Macho Man versus Hulk Hogan. Because we were at your cousin's house, and we got the pay per view. I think Rick showed up for a little bit or something. It was your aunt's house.
Like my aunt Benita?
Yeah. Yeah, so and we watched it there and it was the Macho Man when the Mega Powers exploded. And so I kind of wanted to see what you remember of that match.
I mean, I just remember I just remember like knowing Macho Man wasn't going to win and just kind of being ready to get disappointed from it. I mean, I thought Macho at that point in time, it was clear he was the better worker and just the better overall performer. I remember him looking really small compared to Hogan, right?
I remember you saying that too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that kind of surprised me for some reason. Like I think it took me a while to realize how big Hogan really was. Because you know, you get used to seeing him fighting Andre or John Studd or some of these other guys. And so like the size differential was kind of big and made me think, oh yeah, well, you know, Hogan probably is a lot stronger, but I mean, Macho Man, the guy could just work so well. And yeah, I just remember the whole times, like, you know, I feel like I knew what the outcome was going to be. I was hoping against hope. But you know, we know who came out in the end.
Yeah. I think that's really, that match was really a shift for me and you in terms of the way we watch wrestling, because it's kind of funny that you say that now. You know, because it's funny, like, we both liked Hogan, but out of the whole thing, the one thing that you always brought up was that Hulk Hogan can never have friends. He always, Paul Orndorff was his friend, Andre was his friend, mm-hmm. Macho Man was his friend. He could never have any good friends because, for some reason, they always turned on him in the end. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of funny because I was kind of ready for Hogan to win the title back. Like, him winning the title is like, I think at that time, like, everything is right in the world. Kind of like, you know, because we always question, like, well, why does Cena always get the belt back? Well, I think that's part of the reason why. It's because it's like, it's a sense of normalcy. It's like, you know who the champion is. Like, anybody, any non-fan knows who Hulk Hogan was, and they knew that he didn't have the belt. And so when he won the belt, it's like, oh, good, Hulk Hogan won it back. And so we're watching this match, and pretty much Macho Man's doing everything. I mean, he's running the show. I mean, he's doing every high spot. He's totally outworking Hogan during this whole thing. And we're sitting there, and like I think both me and you were ready for Hulk Hogan to get the title back, because then it's like, well, everything's right in the world. It's like Hulk Hogan is the top guy. He has the most charisma. It's like he's the guy that needs to have the belt. And, you know, to tell you the truth, like for a while after he won the belt, we liked it. You know, I liked it. But when it was going on, I'm kind of sitting there going like, man, this guy's like totally outworking Hogan. And it wasn't so much that Macho Man was going to lose the belt. I think what we were kind of lamenting was that he wasn't the face anymore. We wanted him to stay a face.
You know, like now that we're talking about it a little more, I don't know how accurate this is, but as far as I remember, I think that might be the first time someone kicked out a finisher. It was definitely the first time anyone got it from Macho Man's elbow. Yeah. But I don't know if Hogan had gone
he was.
He had already been kicking out of
Yeah, him. I mean, he was kicking out of stuff. I mean, maybe not. I mean, maybe it was after. Because I remember, Haku would do stuff, and he would kick out of that.
Yeah, because I seem to remember when I was watching that match, and, like, you know how now when you see someone hit their finisher, and, like, you just know by the flow and the timing of the match, like, oh, that guy's kicking out of that, right? But I seem to remember, even though I knew Macho was going to lose, I remember him hitting the elbow, and I was like, well, he hit the elbow, it's over now, right? Yeah. And then Hogan kicked out, and I was shocked. I want to say that was the first time
probably somebody
kicked out of a finisher.
Like, from at least when we're watching wrestling.
Right.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And I think that was a big shift, too, because... it may not even have been a good thing, because now you've seen it devolve to the point where you got to kick out of five finishers just so you can be better than the last.
Well, it wasn't a good thing for Hogan, because then that became Hogan's trademark, was that he's kicking out all the finishers. It got to the point where Hogan and Macho Man would team up in WCW, mm-hmm. and Hogan would just get his ass kicked, this, that, and this, and Macho Man would come off the top rope and hit him with the elbow finisher, mm-hmm. and Hulk Hogan would spring back to life.
Yeah, that woke him up every time.
Yeah, yeah. So it really devolved, I think, Hogan to a point where he started relying on that to get that cheap heat. And it wasn't until he kind of became Hollywood that we started liking him again. But, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I just remember that. I just remember that match, and it was kind of like, it was funny because I wanted Hogan to win, but I didn't want Macho to lose. I was really mad that Macho Man had to become a heel, because I really liked him as a face. And so it really kind of, we knew what was going on back then, but this was like our first experience with it. Mm-hmm. And, I didn't like the whole Macho Man being a heel, and, you know, when he became a face again, of course, when he fought Ultimate Warrior, you know, and then Elizabeth comes back, it's like, oh, you know, great, he's a face again, and that's what I really wanted. But I think it was kind of like to kind of set the groundwork. It really, for us as wrestling fans, it set the groundwork for us, like, kind of looking, like, you tell your son, like, you know, with Ziggler versus whoever it is, and say, okay, well, who had the better match? Like, why was you and when you were talking about Jericho? You know, when you and your son watch Jericho, and you're like, well, why did this guy have a good match? And your son has stopped there and think about it for a second. And it's kind of sad that him as a wrestling fan, he didn't go through the whole kayfabe era. You know, where we're kind of going like, you know, it's like, it was like, okay, wrestling's fake, but we didn't know whether it was fake or not. You know, like, it's like, well, it's kind of like, we know it's fake, but at the same time,
there's some parts of it that are real. Right?
It can be real. So, but you would tell your son, you're like, hey, well, like, well, why was this Jericho match so good? It's like, who won? It's like, well, the guy that, you know, Jericho lost. And you go, well, did Jericho really lose? And your son's like, nah, no, he doesn't. And now your son's, you know, your son has a Jericho shirt. He spots the pink Dolph Ziggler shirt and stuff and everything. So, you know, it's kind of that whole thing. But I think for us, it really kind of changed the way we watch wrestling. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think right after WrestleMania 6, then you have Flair versus Steamboat. And I really wanted Steamboat to win. I mean, I hated Ric Flair. I wanted Steamboat to win, all that stuff. And then I saw the best two out of three where Steamboat wins. And I'm sitting there going like, well, wait a minute. I'm like, yeah, Steamboat won. I said, but Flair had a great match. I'm like, I kind of like Flair. And when he won the third match, I was happy with it, because I thought the better guy that's told the better story, to me, won. And in this case, the guy that told the better story didn't win. Yeah. So I think it's one of those matches that I remember. I remember where we were. I remember watching that pay-per-view. And I remember us watching it. And I remember when you hit the elbow, I think we both kind of looked at each other. And, like, you were happy and I was happy. And I'm sitting there going, like, nah, there's no way, dude. And then he kicks out. We're like, ah, fuck. Yeah. And that's pretty much that sums up that whole match.
Yeah, but it was nice, you know, at the time where, you know, because either it was the first time or it was so rare that when you would see it happen, like, you know, it's hard at this point to get swerved by wrestling. And that was like a time of innocence.
Yeah.
When we were able to get swerved.
You had your wrestling cherry pop that night, huh?
Yeah. It's like, oh.
20-second tiger right there, dude.
I was like, no, I'm good. I'm straight. Mm-hmm.
That's for the dog pound. So let's finish off there. So, hey, Moonscale 50. Let's wait for Moonscale 100 and see if we can keep on doing this thing. It's been pretty good, man. It's been fun. It's been tough to kind of come up with content, but I think when me and you, like, we talk about Jeff Hardy, like, having to do a certain thing, I think when me and you just sit there and talk about stuff that we want to talk about, and kind of brings more insight into where we come from. I think it works really well. I think you need to do a little bit more of it, though, man. You know, it's like you let me kind of dominate the mic. You know, the next 50, you kind of have to gotta get your own voice, dude. You know, kind of have to just talk about things.
You're always going to dominate the mic, but it's all right. I can play off of you well.
All right.
But it's cool. I mean, I think we'll have a lot of good content coming up because, you know, we're now into November, so...
We're going to watch a pay-per-view this month, right?
I think we are.
Yeah, sounds good.
Yeah, and but you know we have the awards coming up at the end of the year, so you know that's some good content, and you know I think it's going to be good. There was a really great run. Most of this year has been really good for wrestling. I think you know as odd as it is, the worst time of wrestling was the build up to WrestleMania. But pre-WrestleMania and everything from Mania to when Daniel Bryan won the title was great, you know?
Yeah.
And now I think, you know, it seems to be picking up steam again.
Well, and then we started this whole thing, to me, with one of the best runs ever. And that was when CM Punk had the title. I mean, that to me, that's one of the best runs that I've seen in a long time. And we were right in the middle of it. And it was good to kind of be talking about wrestling during that time and talking about Punk and really kind of getting behind a guy that deserves us liking him and just kind of commentating on it and seeing how we think about it. But yeah, you're right. I mean, WrestleMania, the road to WrestleMania was hell. I mean, it was just bad. And that was, I mean, I remember us sitting there going like, dude, I'm like, we can't keep on talking about this because it's like, you know, I think we even had a show where we just started like, you know, we started talking about me working in the meat department and like stuff like that, and all the stories that I had.
Paper thin.
Yeah, paper thin. Try. So yeah, I mean, it has been good. It's been good to start talking about this during the time, and I think me kind of coming back into wrestling was at the right time. So yeah, and I'm happy with the product. You know, I'm happy with
Yeah.
It's good,
huh?
It is good.
I even saw someone tweet it with the hashtag
yeah. But it wasn't. It's not Rowan that did it. It was Harper.
Oh.
Yeah.
I know which one's which, but I think I say their names backwards sometimes.
Yeah, sometimes. But so it's okay.
That was a good match.
It was a good. Yeah. No, I mean, the matches were good. The funniest thing was I was seeing Kid come back. And with that crazy ass haircut going on and walking the talk, I'm back. I'm like, dude, nobody cares about you, dude. Why don't you keep on going? But I like you better as an El Local, you know.
Hey, he's not El Local. He's Local Dos.
Oh, Local Dos.
El Local is Ricardo.
Yeah, I like that team up a whole lot better. But it's just kind of funny, like, I'm back. I'm like, dude, yeah, nobody cares. You're trying too hard, man. You know, so.
Maybe he can go out and beat Tensai again.
Be Tensai as long as Tensai isn't stiff, you know.
He was working Tyson Kidd stiff.
Yeah. So, Moon Scale 50. We have Better Have My Donuts over here on Bad News Ramen, and I'll let you finish it off, dude.
All right. Well, you know, I didn't really deliver on what I said last week that I'd come in and give a little breakdown on WWE 2K14, but I can table that till next week. But I definitely. The creator mode is definitely a step up from what it was last year, and I'll get into it more next week when we got some time because it's getting a little late. But I'll definitely have that. Aside from that, you know, things are pretty good. I think I might be watching less wrestling because I'll be more involved in my new universe now, getting that thing all built up. 100 creator wrestler spots is a daunting task to fill.
And right around the time that you're done with all that stuff, you're going to have WWE 2K, what, 14? Or is it 14?
It's 14. 14.
Okay, yeah, so right around the time you're all done with 14.
Now I've already filled up like about 40 spots.
Good, man. That's good. I'll have to come over and take a gander at it, Dean.
Yeah.
So, yeah. All right.
Yeah.
All right. We just go 50. Thanks for sticking around, and then we'll see you for the next 50.